Yes, yes, indeed. You are listening to the KRFY Morning Show, and we are off to a wonderful start here, an abrupt start. It is January 21st, 2016, and my guests today are two representatives, I guess, of the Sandpoint Rock Gym. And we'll be in conversation about that. And then a little later in the hour, Cameron Rasmussen coming in to give us the news on the city council meeting last night. But first, it's time for the all-important weather update here in North Idaho. It is currently somewhere between rain and snow. As I came in the door, it seemed like snow to me, and that will be continuing until 4 p.m. Off and on, and then likely after 4 p.m. as well, mixed with rain. High today near 36 degrees, and tonight just down to 33 degrees. So this snow is kind of, looks like it is going to be coming rain over the weekend. Same on Friday and Saturday night finally becoming snow again into Sunday. Highs around 40 degrees, 38 or 40 degrees all weekend long. Lows in the lower 30s. And that's all she wrote. That's the story of weather in North Idaho. Amy Midstock and Eric Fulgenzi, yes, I think I got those names right, have graciously joined me in the studio this morning. And good morning to you. How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. Is that loud enough? Oh, you're on microphone 4 is what's going on. Now I got it. Eric was on the, I put Eric on the wrong microphone there, but now we're all right. And you guys are from, it is called the Sandpoint Rock Gym, correct?
Correct. We're from the Sandpoint Rock Gym, and also a nonprofit climbing hall.
And what are your positions with the Sandpoint Rock Gym? What's your history?
We're both on the board. I'm in charge of public relations and whatever falls on my plate. And Eric, even though he's not wearing a skirt today.
I'm the secretary, but I could be wearing a skirt because it's radio.
Yes, it is. No one would know. I'm not wearing any, well, never mind. So that's your role in the organization. The Sandpoint Rock Gym, for those who are unfamiliar, like me, is where? And what is it?
It is a climbing hall, or a bouldering hall, actually, and we're located at the Granary, right across from Evans Brothers Coffee. And that taller side of the building, there's a little sign over our door. We're pretty low-key on public marketing right there just because we're trying to preserve the essence of that Granary building and the history of it. So we don't have a lot of signage. But if you look, you'll see a little sign that says Sandpoint Rock Gym over our door. And inside the facility, what we have is basically graciously provided by our members and volunteers of the gym, a really extensive bouldering hall. Which, if you don't climb and you don't know what that is a lot of pretend rock bolted to pretend cliffs.
Okay. How high is this bouldering hall?
It's 12 feet tall. Bouldering gyms are getting more popular in the United States, and that was one of the reasons that we decided to make a bouldering gym was because it's very accessible for beginners. You need very little equipment. You just need a pair of shoes, which we have probably over 20 that are available for use in the gym when you come in, and a little bit of chalk for your hands. And we usually have some of that on hand as well. And it's a cool way to access rock climbing if you've never done so before. And it's pretty safe as well. Bouldering is pretty safe, especially so the ceiling is 12 feet tall. So that means that your hands are never higher than 12 feet, which means, you know, if you're about 6 feet tall, your feet may be 6 feet from the ground. And the ground in the gym is all padded with about 6 inches of closed cell and open cell foam as well. And then we have crash pads that we call them, which are another 4 or 5 inches of foam for falling.
So that is pretty safe.
It's super safe. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's inherent risk in any sort of, you know, quote, dangerous activity like rock climbing, but there's a lot of ways to mitigate that. We always encourage spotting if you're in there with other people, and we always encourage being in there with other people because as it's a completely volunteer-run gym, it's only staffed 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm. So it's 12 feet tall, which sounds safe for beginners. Is it fun for more advanced rock climbers as well?
Yeah, one of the really unique things about climbing gyms and bouldering gyms in general is that there's I don't even know how many companies that make climbing holds, and they make them in all variation of shapes and sizes, and the people who set the routes really have the creative power to set something that's easy for beginners or really challenging for people who are near professional level.
Wow. Okay.
The bouldering hall idea and the bouldering gym idea is to simulate what you might experience outdoors so that you can train for something maybe more challenging. And also, like Eric said, so that beginners can go and not have a lot of equipment. Yeah. Equipment can be expensive, as we can attest to, having that kind of a hobby. And that it's dynamic. So from all levels, you can go there and enjoy it. You don't have to have any skill to walk in the door and do it. But we have a lot of really good climbers in there who make very challenging routes, and they'll train for pretty epic mountaineering adventures just in the rock gym.
Huh.
And then we have a training room in back that has what we call a systems board, and it looks like some sort of medieval torture methodology. It's a bunch of wood blocks bolted to plywood that the guys climb up and down, and the gals that are badass enough to do it. And then we have some weights, and we're trying to expand to have some cardio equipment too, so people can treat it more like a gym.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Putting the gym in rock gym.
Yeah.
Is it, so that building is a cool old building. Is it, it's also a very tall building. Is there a dream one day to make a taller wall, or is that not something you guys are thinking about? Eric?
I think from the get-go, I've been involved with the gym basically since it came into being. I moved to town right as it was starting to be built, and I got in touch with Christian Thompson, who founded the gym. And we talked, that question comes up a lot, and we talked about it and talked about it, and the short answer is no. There's not plans to expand into there for a whole variety of reasons.
Well, that's okay.
Yeah.
And you guys have talked about it. So maybe someday you'll talk about it again.
Exactly. It's always on the table.
Yeah. So you've got a, I know you already told me, but let me picture it, I guess. How long is this wall? It's 12 feet tall. How big is the wall itself if I walk in the door?
So it's pretty much a square space that we've built out, and there's, off the top of my head, probably six or eight different what I would call walls, which we I guess you could say features, where there's a big column and there's something that's equivalent to a cave and lots of different inclines, and it's very varied, and so it gives people a chance to climb on fake terrain that closely mimics real terrain. So that when you do get out on the rock, you have a bit more experience if you've never climbed outside before. But I think overall, there's probably a couple hundred square feet of climbing, I would say. If it's 12 feet tall, and probably it's got about 150-foot perimeter. There's a lot of climbing.
And we just counted routes this week because we change them commonly, and we have currently 59 routes in all ranges of difficulty. And every couple of months, we change them so that if you've gotten really good at climbing something or you want to try some new moves, we pull everything off and start a bunch of new challenges.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a big, I mean, it sounds like you could probably do that forever. I mean, you could, yeah, there's no shortage of routes. You'll never run out. Yep. You said, so you came to town right when it was founded, which was when? Or right around the time it was founded, which was?
2010.
2010.
Yes.
And was it, in 2010, was the building already acquired and you guys were starting to set up, or where?
Yeah, when I moved to town, we had already secured a lease for the place. And so there's a separate building owner and there's a couple of other tenants in there. So we're one of the tenants and we have a lease that I guess it's probably a yearly lease. That part I don't know as the secretary. When I was coming to town, we were just finishing construction. I got in on a couple days of construction, but it was all volunteer built and pretty much donation funded. So from the beginning, it's been a real community oriented space.
Hmm. Yeah, all the gear, like getting those really safe padded floors, those are thousands of dollars to get. And we got a lot of donation of that. We got a bunch of donation for plywood. We had donations for a lot of our holds. Then members started donating holds. And basically, it was built from the ground up on people who just wanted to have a place to climb and hang out with other climbers.
Cool. And now it is a nonprofit now. You guys have nonprofit status.
Yeah,
we do.
Nonprofit status, which is great because it means all of our donations now are, you know, tax deductible and helps us get in with some other organizations and adheres to our mission statement of just providing a space for the community.
Cool. So it's staffed 3 days a week. Does that mean open 3 days a week or what are the hours? Go ahead.
Because of our membership and it's a nonprofit, and obviously we don't have the ability to staff it full time, and nor is it really necessary because it's so safe to just go in there and play. Mm-hmm. What we have is a volunteer staffing system. High schoolers, we like to use high schoolers just because they're great to have adding to the community of our climbers. And we are there on Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays from 3 to 6. So if you don't have a membership or a punch card and you want to come in or you just want to try it out and know that the door is open, that's typically when we're there. And, you know, they're great. They're high schoolers, but sometimes they have some other things to do. Mm-hmm. And so every once in a while you might show up and there's not somebody there, but usually there's people there and they have good information. They have waivers. Everybody climbing, whether it's one time or for a month or for a year, has to sign a waiver. And that's one of the reasons you want staff to be there. Mm-hmm. And then you can also get any longer term memberships on those days as well. So we have 6 month memberships. We have 10 and 20 time punch cards and we have annual memberships. And when you get your punch card or your membership, you have a key card access to the door. So you can climb pretty much anytime you want, which is really nice and very rare in the country that that's available. And one of the reasons we're talking about not expanding to a high wall is because we have that flexibility because our climbing is so safe. We don't have to monitor all the time.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, the hours with the punch card or with the pass card, excuse me, are 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. So you can really go in there. I mean, most of the time when I go in there to train or just to climb, there's one or two other people. Unless I, you know, call a bunch of friends and say, hey, let's go boulder. And then we have a little bouldering party. But most of the time, it's pretty unique. It's very unique. I've been to gyms in Portland, Oregon, and Bend, Oregon. And it's like you're in there with 30 or 40 other people and it's crowded. And
Cool. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's pretty neat that you can just go in anytime. But the first time you go in, if you're me and you haven't been rock climbing in like about a decade, what do I do? What's my first move? I go in on a Tuesday afternoon or something like that.
Right. Go in on a Tuesday afternoon or Wednesday or Thursday and show up. If you have rock shoes, awesome. If you don't, just show up. Mm-hmm. You don't need really any special equipment. You want some clothes that you can move around in. So don't wear a business suit.
Okay.
And then you show up and there's a high schooler there. And I actually don't know the names of our volunteers. I'm so sorry, volunteers. And some very nice rock gym employee staff will come and tour you around the gym, show you basically what the rock routes mean. Like, what does V1 actually mean? There's a scaling for difficulty, and they're all usually labeled, so you know what is what. And then they'll show you the equipment in the back room. And if you've never climbed, they'll show you what that is all about.
Cool.
Yeah.
If I'm scared, will one of them... Spot me.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you're scared, I mean, it's when you get in there, it sounds so intimidating because we're like, ooh, rock climbing. Mm-hmm. There's an extreme sport. When you get in there, it's like a playground for grownups. Totally. Really.
Yeah.
And kids, little kids love it. And mm-hmm. It's really hard to get in over your head because Eric was saying if you're up on top and you're 6 feet tall, you know, you don't always even pull yourself all the way to the ceiling. So it's an easy hop down.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you're doing something a little bit difficult and you know that if you fell in that move and you might land funny, then somebody would spot you and just kind of be there to help you roll and protect your head. Hmm. But even then, if your head came crashing down on the floor, it's padded.
Yeah. So. Yeah. It does sound, I like, yeah, it sounds like a playground for grownups, as you said.
Absolutely.
That's pretty cool. So speaking of ages, what's the age range or how young can you be and how old can you be?
So you can be, you know, I'm a parent, so I'm sort of like, as long as your kid, excuse me, can walk or mm-hmm. crawl, it's mm-hmm. ready for the rock gym.
Cool.
The issue with children is just teaching them appropriate rock gym rules. Like if somebody's climbing, you don't run around underneath them
mm-hmm.
Because they might fall off the wall at any given time. So that is the main concern with children. But we're really family friendly. There are a few members with children that go in there. And basically the kids just typically stay a little bit lower mm-hmm. Or their parents are responsible and keep an eye on them if they climb higher. I don't know if we have children's shoes in there, probably a couple of pairs.
Yeah, there's a couple of pairs. A lot of times kids just climb in their sneakers as long as they're clean.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, and then we have memberships. If you're an adult and you have a membership, your seven-year-old and below gets to climb free. And then we have children's membership rates too. And they are scaled for families just so that it's more affordable.
Nice. So the rock gym, do you guys, I don't know, any particular, if I am interested, but I guess I'm scared. Do you have any particular tips or can you encourage me to come in?
I would say, mm-hmm. One of the principles that we operate from is that it's a community. It's a community gym. And mm-hmm. we use that verbiage very carefully because we want to encourage more people to get into climbing. The whole reason that we started the gym was to allow people to access a sport or an activity that has been very meaningful to all of us. And so while I think that the big picture, when people think of rock climbing, they're like, oh my God, it's these death-defying weirdos who scale walls with no ropes. Uh-oh. And it's so far from that for most of us. For a lot of people, rock climbing is just going out and climbing up a somewhat technical mountain with a rope so that you're really safe in case an accident happens.
Yeah.
But I would say that getting back to the community piece, everyone's really open. Like, they're sort of... an etiquette in the gym that if you're in the gym and someone else is in there whom you don't know, you introduce yourself. And that's to create the community. It's such a small space that it's not a place where people come and work out with their headphones in. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a stereo and there's usually always music on, and it's a really friendly, warm atmosphere.
Cool. Why should I get into rock climbing? Why do you guys get into rock climbing?
Climbing rules.
Okay.
No, I got into rock climbing as a teenager and then got away from it. And then I lived in Bend, Oregon for about 4 years and spent a lot of time at Smith Rock State Park, which is known kind of around the world as the birthplace of American sport climbing, which is one discipline of rock climbing. So I was really privileged to kind of grow up climbing there. And climbing changed my perspective on a lot of things. It's a very physically and mentally intense sport. And so it's this pursuit where you have to be, where I've found it serves me well to be very fit athletically, but then also very fit mentally. And so I kind of feel like a Jedi when mm-hmm. I'm rock climbing.
Okay.
I do not share that sympathy.
You don't feel like a Jedi?
I do not feel like a Jedi when I'm rock climbing. I typically felt like a paraplegic T-Rex scraping my way along.
Uh-huh.
I got into rock climbing by accident in South America in a very long race that was an expedition race. And part of the race feature was rappelling down this 220-foot cliff on a dangling rope with gear on my back. And I'd been running for about 4 days. And it was just pouring rain. And there was somebody there who had set up the rope. And I didn't understand it technically, like what was going to happen. I knew that there was a rope section in the race. I just had to go. And I wasn't worried about it until I got there. And this guy was saying, yeah, you're going to go down this and I'm going to lock you in because you haven't slept in 4 days to make sure it's safe. And I was like perched on the edge of this cliff looking at the rope dangling below going, I can't go down. And I was white as a ghost. And he was like, you have to now because I can't pull you up anymore. Like, I don't have equipment to do that. And so I went off the edge of this cliff trying to learn how to lower myself on this rope with a lot of weight on my back. It was absolutely terrifying. And then before I even reached the ground, it was already exhilarating. And I thought, I want to learn how to do that without fear of death. That would be fun, maybe, in a different life. And so at the time, I lived in Germany, and I lived at what I would consider the indoor version of Smith Rock, just down the street from a really great climbing gym with very high walls, about 45, no, much higher. They were about 60-foot high walls. And I started going there to climb indoors and learn about it and learn what's really important when you start to transform into outside climbing is understanding equipment and how to be safe. It's a very safe sport if you get the knowledge and you use it appropriately. And that's how I started. A little bit more birth by fire than Eric.
Yes.
Yeah. Sounds like it.
Yes, indeed. I'm inclined to ask like what you were doing in South America for 4 days.
I was there for a race called the Patagonian Expedition Race. It's a 10-day multi-sport event known as one of the most difficult races on the planet just because it's insane. And you basically bushwhack your way through sub-Antarctic Patagonia. And I went as a journalist rather than a competitor. And I thought I had a good deal, but journalists don't have teams and they have to carry all their own equipment. So so I chased teams for 10 days. I still have a fear of cold water because we had to wade through some really insane glacial rivers, actually swim through them. And again, fear your life, just like you do that a lot in those kind of races. And I've gone down a couple times. I don't know why. It's like having children. You forget the pain and you just say, oh, yeah, that was a good idea.
And a rock climber was born.
And a rock climber was born.
All right. Amy, you just mentioned when you came in, I'm going to ask about a subject that you've probably talked to death already. But you were stuck last year. Can I ask about that?
Yeah. I'm sorry, Sam what? Point. I know you're tired of hearing about it.
Yeah.
My one claim to fame. Yeah, actually, that might be appropriate for this forum because accidents do happen. Not in the gym. This can't happen in the gym, which is kind of nice. You might get like a 6-ounce toy rock dumped on your foot. So I was climbing with our treasurer, actually, Jason Luthy. Good morning, Jason. I'm sure you're listening. And we had a very safe, successful climb to the top of Chimney Rock. It's really good climbing up there, a lot of fun routes. But a couple years ago, part of that rock face fell off. And so there's a lot of loose talus, like really large boulders. And they take about a decade of weather to settle. And they hadn't settled. And so after a good climb on our way out, a large boulder rolled on me as we were crossing that field. And we were prepared. As much as you can prepare for the trauma part. So, you know, Jason is a super expert outdoors person, and both of us are familiar with those kinds of accidents and being ready to handle it to the best of our ability. So we made a fire. I say we, but obviously I was a little incapacitated and feeling very sorry for myself while Jason made a fire. And then waited until search and rescue could come out and lift that very large stone off my body. And then it was, that was just the first part of it. The rest of the rescue was still pretty pretty difficult, and the guys were great. Our search and rescue here is really incredible. I'm impressed with their cooperation and what everybody did there. And then the next morning, the military came and flew me out, and now I'm fully recovered.
Cool.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great, but ouch also.
Yeah. Ouch. There's a lot of pain in that. And it's kind of funny because when you climb or you ride bikes or do any of these things, there's sort of a certain level of suffering that you happily accept. It's what you do. Yeah. And then there's some, when you have control over it, you're sort of like, oh yeah, I'm going to push myself. I'm going to push myself up this route and my hands are getting tired or I'm getting a little crampy. All of these things can happen. And then sometimes some different pain happens that you have no control over. Mm-hmm. But I felt pretty prepared for it, even in that sense of it. Like, oh, okay, well, this kind of sucks. But there's nothing we can do about it now.
Well, thank goodness you were prepared. And how nice to have the Sandpoint Rock Gym here in town where a person can train for going out there rather than just, you know, rather than just saying, I think I'm going to try rock climbing today on that or something, you know, on that cliff that I see over there in my tennis shoes. You can go down to the rock gym and
learn how to do it safely.
Yeah.
My first experience was like that kind of person.
Yeah.
And it was pretty awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was one of the scariest moments of my life. And the next day I woke up with poison oak all over my arms because I was clinging to anything I could find to get me all the way up the cliff.
And yeah.
So don't do that. Come to the rock gym. Practice your skills. We also put on clinics, usually twice a year, that are skill-building clinics for people who want to go outside, to be able to get outside. We'll announce those on our website and on Facebook, so you know, just keep posted. But they're a great way to build your skills. I know one of our board members actually came into the gym with very little technical knowledge, and in the 5 years that he's been climbing and part of the gym, he's climbed Chimney Rock. He's done his own trips to the desert towers in Utah, outside of Moab, and so he's really become an accomplished climber, and I think it's in large part because of the climbing gym, because of having that resource in our community. So,
and we're always so excited when somebody comes in and wants to climb a little bit, and especially like in the spring and the summertime, we're always looking for what we call belay slaves, people to get us up and down the mountain safely. So we're happy to teach people those skills so that we know we have more people to go and climb with. And we start climbing outdoors more. You'll always find, you know, even if you just start bouldering and you're thinking like, I really want to know what it's like to go climb, you know, one of our local crags. We climb down at Laclede quite a bit. There's some good rock down there. And we promote taking care of those trails and cleaning up trash and stuff. And so people can use the rock gym as a segue to that by coming in and getting to know people. And then we're always posting on Facebook or the website like, hey, we're going to go do trash pickup and climb. And it's a good way to get in on that and make new friends.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you guys do lead. I mean, maybe it's not formally organized, but if I was interested in, not just climbing at the rock gym, but I wanted to get into climbing out in the world, this would be a great place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. Climbing is very much a mentor apprentice sport. It's almost that's a lot of ways. I mean, there are classes that you can take, but in a lot of ways that's how the knowledge is passed on. And then the learner has to just be motivated to say, okay, I'm gonna read now all this technical knowledge and then apply it. So but yeah, definitely a good way to come or to find partners and just to be able to get outside is to come into the gym and meet people.
Cool.
Yeah.
I'm gonna throw to a musical break in just a moment, and I will quiz you guys on your music knowledge before I let you go. But one more time, where is it? And did we forget to mention anything? What else can we talk about here?
I
feel like we barely scratched the surface.
We have a couple of things coming up that we can talk about.
Things, events.
Yeah.
This is what I like.
Some cool ways to learn some more about the rock gym and to come and see us, even if you don't want to climb. So next week we have a rock gym movie night, and it's a very casual event where we put a projector and we display a movie, I think on an old shower curtain that's hanging from the ceiling, and everybody brings their own popcorn and snacks, and the gym is a little bit cool because usually we're working out in there, so we tell people to bring a sleeping bag or just your puffy. I think it's a PG-13 movie. I can't remember how kid friendly it is.
I think that's right.
Yeah, we're watching Vertical Limit.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was going to guess Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next that, month. That's a good one, though. We'll put that on the list.
Right. Yeah.
That's right.
I think we watched Cliffhanger last year, maybe.
Oh, great. Yeah. All right. So. Yeah.
And so we encourage anybody to come. It's totally free. You can come, and the gym is open free to climbing for an hour before, so you don't have to have a membership. You only have to sign a waiver. You don't even have to do a $5 fee. You can just come and play. And that's Wednesday night, and the movie starts at 6, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 6 o'clock. And
next Wednesday.
Yeah, Wednesday the 26th.
Okay. 27th. A little less than a week from yesterday. Okay. Yep.
Correct. So there that's coming up. And then the other thing we have coming up, and I'll let you talk about it, Eric, is the bouldering competition. Or I can talk about it.
So when is it?
It's March 26th. I'll talk about
March 26th. Thank you, Amy.
Yeah. So we have our very first bouldering competition coming up, and we don't have a lot of details about it because it's brand new and we're really excited about it. We've got sponsorship from Mountain Gear in Spokane. So we'll have a lot of good prizes to win, and it's all level. So basically anybody can come and climb, and it's $30 entry. The fee goes towards gym improvements. We're talking about getting some cardio equipment in the gym and
painting a couple things, maybe painting a mural.
Mm. Oh, that's right. We're going to decorate.
Actually, having students from Sandpoint High paint a mural.
Very nice.
Yeah.
They're talented.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll have signs up and posters up and information about it on the website soon as well. So if you're like interested in climbing, or you already are a climber and you want to, you know, show your brawn a little bit, and show us what you can do. We're going to put a bunch of new routes up just before that competition. But now you can come and train for it. And really, even if you have never climbed and you come and train for it, you'd have a great time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cool. Yeah.
And I think that's it. Oh, in May, we're going to have a free gym day for children and families.
Okay.
Date undetermined yet, but that's coming up and we'll post heavily. We're trying to get some little kids and families to go in there and hang out and see what it's all about. And then we often have, Eric mentioned this before, we have climbing clinics a couple times a year. And those come up time to time. We'll have one in the spring for sure to show people how to safely get outdoors.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Very nice. So the Rock Gym, you guys have a website too, right?
We do. It's sandpointrockgym.com.
Okay.
And then we have two other great online resources. One of them is our Sandpoint Rock Gym Facebook page that basically we say, hey, the opening hours are different, or we post our movies and those kind of events are on there. And then there's another group that's really well trafficked called the Friends of Sandpoint Rock Gym. Mm-hmm. And we like that as our community page. So when people are looking for climbing partners, or they're saying, hey, I'm going to go to the rock gym, or I want to train for this climbing up Chimney Rock, or maybe we're going to go hit something else this weekend and do a big weekend climb, everybody posts that stuff on that page. And that's where you can make new climbing friends. Or if a new climber was like, hey, I've never been, will somebody meet me at the gym and show me what this is about? A lot of people would respond and be supportive.
Yeah. Cool. So there you go. Facebook, social media.
Social media.
All right. Mm-hmm. The Rock Gym is in that great big tall building.
The Granary.
Yep.
Yep.
Over by Evans Brothers. And we've got Amy Midstock and Eric Fulgenzi. Yes. Thank you guys for joining me. I think that's about it, unless you got any last words.
Just thanks.
Okay. Yeah,
and come see us at the gym.
Yeah. Come hang out. Come climb.
You guys should come back sometime. We'll talk more. Maybe, I don't know, when the come May or whatever, when you got a nice event coming great. Up, another one. Here's the quiz for you. 1977. On this date in 1977, so 39 years ago. Yeah, 39 years ago today. What album was at the top of the American charts? What hit on this date in 1977?
Dead silence over here.
Yeah.
It's a soundtrack
to a movie. That's your hint number two. Hint number three is best-selling soundtrack to a movie of all time. Started its run on the charts on this date.
Wow, that's impressive.
I know.
Yeah.
I would think like, oh, God, I don't know, a Disney or a Bond.
Think John Travolta. In a white suit.
Disco.
Saturday Night Fever.
Saturday Night Fever it is. Here's the Bee Gees. Wow. On 88.5 KRFY, Cameron Rasmussen waiting in the wings. We'll talk about the city council meeting when we return. Amy and Eric, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jack.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the KRFY Morning Show. For copyright reasons, we can't reproduce protected music on the podcast edition of The Morning Show. But feel free to tune in live at 8 a.m. at 88.5 on your radio dial, or listen anywhere in the world by streaming us through our website, krfy.org. If you listen live, you can hear the full program, including musical breaks. While you're visiting krfy.org, consider tapping that donate button and help keep KRFY providing unique quality radio in North Idaho. Thanks for your support. We now return to the show. Good morning. You're listening to the KRFY Morning Show. Thanks to Amy and Eric for coming in. And turning now to microphone 4 in the Tiki Room, where Cameron Rasmussen sits. And thank you for joining me this morning, sir.
Well, thank you for having me.
You were at an interesting city council meeting yesterday, and I'll ask you about the results of that, but first, can you what's the history here of this particular motion that was on the table last night? It was because it was introduced last week, right? And
2 weeks ago it was first considered toward the beginning of January. Outgoing Mayor Kerry Logan and the mayor to be sworn in, Shelby Ronstad, kind of teamed up on a mayoral proclamation and resolution. And essentially, the resolution was meant to respond to a statement from the sheriff, a letter that he actually sent to Butch Otter, Governor Butch Otter, and also a resolution passed by the Bonner and Boundary County Commissioners that essentially were saying, hey, refugees represent a credible security threat. We're not satisfied with their vetting process. We urge the governor to do everything that he can to halt this resettlement program. And so, in response, the, Ronstad and Logan, put together, a proclamation and a resolution that essentially welcomed them properly vetted refugees in Sandpoint. It was intended to put Sandpoint forward as a welcoming community, also counter to some degree their perceptions of those resolutions kind of having a sort of a fearful quality to them, or a quality of paranoia that may be off-putting to people looking in from the outside. I think that was their perspective, and as we saw last night, there was a bit of an inglorious end to the whole thing. So, yes.
So it was at the beginning of January, it was a mayoral proclamation was made, and that was, I mean, just made by the mayor. You don't need council approval for that, I suppose.
Yes, and in fact, that was the last action of Kerry Logan in office, was to issue that proclamation, which was read, you know, more or less unedited on the council chamber, in the council chambers. So, yeah, the proclamation was issued, but of course, a council resolution requires a council vote to pass. And last night, the council, because of the enormous attendance to these council meetings in opposition to the resolution, their support for the resolution kind of evaporated, and Mayor Ronstad was requested that the consideration be withdrawn. So it was not voted down. It was simply withdrawn from consideration.
Hmm.
Yes.
It was originally brought. So the mayoral proclamation was made, and then at the following council meeting, it was
Well, in fact, the resolution was originally considered at that council meeting, because of the insane turnout, I've been doing this for 5 years now, and I've never seen a turnout like I saw at the last two council meetings here in January. Because of that turnout, and because of the hours of public comment that occurred that night, the council decided to table the measure. And it's clear that that sometime in the 2 weeks since that original meeting, they decided, well, this is their rationale was this is too divisive. We can't support it. And, certainly we have seen a lot of very impassioned conversation on the internet and elsewhere about this issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So last night, I don't actually remember the names of the council members, but do you remember the chain of events? Last night it was two council members spoke first, and then Ronstadt.
That's correct. Councilman Tom Eddy was the first to speak up, and he essentially said, this, like I indicated before, he essentially said this is too divisive. I can't support the resolution as written. He did affirm the city of Sandpoint's non-discrimination ordinance, which in spirit is kind of similar to what they were considering that evening. It just doesn't specifically mention refugees. So it does detach it from this political issue that we're following right now. But it does, the Sandpoint's non-discrimination ordinance does affirm the city's commitment to human rights and, freedom to live without fear based on, race, class, gender, sexual orientation, all of the big categories these days. So, so he did read that. That was read into the record. But of course, he and also Councilwoman Rule said they were not able to support the resolution just because it had been such a divisive sort of force, as they said.
Now, these are all, at least my understanding of it is that really everything from the governor's proclamation to the response from the sheriff and the county commissioners to the possible response to that from the city of Sandpoint, these are all really symbolic gestures, which is not to say meaningless, but they had no force of law.
Oh, they're definitely symbolic gestures without any sort of impact on the resettlement program. As we've said many times in the past, that's a federal program. There's nothing that the state or local government entities can do to really affect it in any meaningful way, outside of voice their concerns or whatever, but it's ultimately up to the federal agencies that control this to determine how they're going to play out. Now, I do think that they are, that there's certainly political statements, and I think to some degree the Sandpoint resolution was meant as a face-saving. I believe the people who drafted it intended it as a kind of a face-saving measure because, they were concerned with the reputation for, white supremacist groups moving into North Idaho. And just of course, the Ruby Ridge incident is kind of what people think of when they think of North Idaho. And so I think that I think that they intended this as something to send out to people who are thinking of vacationing in Sandpoint or thinking of moving here. Listen, we're a community that welcomes everyone. We're not necessarily discriminatory of people based on their religion or anything like that, because I think they feared that was the image that was getting sent out there with the commissioner activity, and the statement from the sheriff and whatnot. And, you know, so, but of course, because this is such a hot button political issue, there again provoked a lot of conversation and argument and mobilized a big group of people to turn out and be at that meeting.
We actually had here on the KFI Morning Show on Tuesday, we had Commissioner Bailey and Mayor Ronstadt in to discuss the opposing viewpoints on this issue. At the time, it seemed to this listener anyway, I wasn't in the room, but it seemed like the mayor still intended to go through with the proposal, and this was just 2 days ago. Was this a surprise to you? You've been following this for a while. Was this surprising that it took this turn?
I was a little surprised. You know, I listening to that podcast, it did sound like Ronstadt was pretty keen on and hopeful that this was going to pass. He expressed something to that effect on the program. And, you know, I thought that at the very least, even if they didn't pass, the resolution as it stood, they would replace it with a reaffirmation of the town's commitment to human rights and non-discrimination, and take some kind of official action to put that message out there. But they didn't. It was withdrawn without any kind of further action. And that was a little bit surprising to me. I think that, it seemed to me like the council did want to put some kind of positive message out there. They just didn't take the official mechanisms to do that, even though the original non-discrimination ordinance was read into the record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was also, I think it was a pretty short meeting.
Because they weren't conducting public comment as they did at the first meeting, there was it was a much shorter meeting compared to that first scenario. They did have a few people because every council meeting begins with an opportunity to comment on issues that are not on the agenda. They did have a few people kind of take advantage of that and comment on items that I would say were related to the issue at hand. They just used that. They kind of framed it in a way that was making a point without making a point, if you take my meaning. So,
yeah.
On the whole, it was a much shorter meeting.
I'm not sure if you know the answer to this question, but I don't. If they had decided to pursue the resolution, would it have then been open to public comment again, or was that closed after the last meeting?
It was closed. It was, okay. Yeah, they, I figured the city's rationale was, we gave people opportunity to comment. We're just going to go through the same rigmarole this time around. So, you know, public comment opportunity is closed. And they took some heat for that from people who weren't happy about that. They also took some heat about holding that meeting at the council chambers, which was, you know, too small to hold all the people that wanted to be in there. And so they had to end up shutting some members of the public out there, which resulted in the demonstrations that we saw last night, kind of a human rights sort of supporting group that held a candlelit vigil outside. And then on the other side of the parking lot, there were, you know, people were waving American flags and holding up signs that were protesting refugees and sometimes Muslims in general, and that sort of thing. So,
Interesting.
Yeah, it's been very, very interesting to watch this unfold.
Yeah, I guess I wonder when the last time was that the before this that the city council meetings were overflowing the council chambers.
Well, you know, I had a conversation with former councilman Justin Shuck, and he said that you know, I don't know if it was necessarily as well attended as those meetings we saw in the past few weeks, but he said that there was a similar level of controversy when he was on the council, and they were talking about removing fluoride from the water, the public water, which the council ultimately did do. You know, that's seen by a lot of people. That's commonly regarded as a very, you know, positive thing for public health in terms of minimizing tooth decay. But there's another, you know, sizable group of people that believe that, you know, fluoride has all of these harmful side effects. And they were saying, well, give us the choice. Don't put this, you know, in the water against our will. And so apparently that was a very contentious issue. I had not yet moved to Sandpoint at that time. So I kind of missed that one. But yeah.
I did not know that the water here was not fluoridated.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
And I'm not, I guess I'm not surprised, knowing the area, that that was a contentious issue at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we are, it's 8:55. The time does fly. Cameron's here from, you are the
editor
mm-hmm. of the Sandpoint Reader.
Yes.
There is probably a new issue on our downstairs doorstep, if I'm not mistaken.
If it's not here yet, it's going to be here very soon. In fact, when I step out of this studio, I am going on to make my deliveries. So I suppose I will see everyone out and about here in just a few minutes.
I should also mention that the city of Sandpoint now puts their, not only the minutes, but the entire recorded video and audio, or at least video proceedings of the city council meetings online, so you can get the news straight from as it happened by going to the city of Sandpoint's website and follow the links to the council meetings. Is there more coverage of this in today's Reader?
Well, we certainly have the news story of the events from last night, and we have a number of letters addressing it. Of course, this has been a very big topic for letters. You know, as to whether the story is done here in Sandpoint, you know, I can't really say. I think that for the time being, we're going to see not much council or official government action on this particular topic, but it's clear that people feel very passionately about it, and as to whether there are going to be any more demonstrations for one side or the other, or we're going to see this come up in the primary elections as a topic of conversation, which are, you know, going to be unfolding here in the late spring, you know, that's a subject that I suppose we'll have to wait and see about.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It is. I guess it's over for now in the city council chambers, but it is, of course, still a topic of national discussion. It doesn't seem to be going away on that score anytime soon. So
no.
Yeah. Well, what else is in the Reader this week?
Well, you know, we have a few interesting articles. We've got a contributor who went to a recent opportunity to comment on coal and oil train traffic and terminals. Of course, that's a very controversial issue because any kind of increase in train traffic or any transportation of hazardous material represents a sort of a risk to Sandpoint in the case of derailment or whatnot. So that's something that people feel very strongly about here. And we had somebody write up a little account of her trip down to Spokane for this public comment opportunity. We also had our film contributor weigh in on the recent Oscar announcements. He's kind of talking about how there were some surprises in the nominations, but also quite a bit of controversy just because, you know, in a year that's given us a lot of great performances from African American actors and all sorts of minorities, you know, we're seeing, you know, a lot of, you know, the same old white guys getting nominated. Right. So that's been a real controversy in the movie scene lately. We have a story about an opera trio from the Music Conservatory that's going to be taking place here soon. Of course, we've got more coverage of the refugee issue, a little write-up of Commissioner Bailey and Mayor Ronstadt's conversation that took place right here. So, yeah, it sounds like we've got a few interesting things for readers to dig into this week.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Well, I look forward to reading that. I think that's my next move.
All right.
I was going to play a song, but we are fresh out of time. Cameron? Yes, it is. 88.5 Ponderé. And this has been The Morning Show. Cameron, thanks so much for coming up and talking for a minute.
Thank you for having me.
It's going to be Bird Note and then Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long. On this date in 1984, Yes, with Owner of a Lonely Heart, was at number one on the charts. So we're going to kick Otto's off with that today. That's it. Good morning. All right.